Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Changes coming at the Fed and a reopening proposal. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Joe Kraus, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, Joe, that is right. There is, of course, a change at the Fed and perhaps a change with the Iranian standoff. But that wasn't the story in my book. It was earnings and earnings all week long. And because they have been so good, it has driven the market up despite any of this negative news that you want to look at.
That's right. This is actually a bit of a breath of fresh air, I think, to see how it is that earnings and the fundamentals of the businesses that we can invest in is really driving market performance as opposed to the bigger geopolitical or Fed decisions. I mean, oftentimes over time, you know, you do see that, I think we've talked about it before, how geopolitics can really drive the market in the short term, but it does tend to be short-lived. What we really want to do is focus more on that long term. And taking a look at the report card for businesses, the earnings numbers that have been coming out have exceeded expectations. I think it was FactSet, they were saying about how maybe 13% year-over-year increase in earnings.
Early in the year, in late last year.
Yep, exactly. So that's what the expectation was. Those expectations were ramped a little bit higher. But even that raised bar, businesses are just like leaping over it.
Leaping over the higher bar, right? To use an analogy. But there's a lot that's going on. And we saw a lot of tech reports that came out this week. And a big part of that is the spend on capital expenditures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so capital expenditures. That is when businesses invest in property, plant, equipment. Interestingly, we also got the GDP numbers, gross domestic product numbers, that can also break that out. That was a driver of not just what was going on the corporate side with earnings and stocks were reacting to it, but it was also helping to drive economic activity. The numbers from just a handful of companies, right? Alphabet, you had Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, when they were reporting their capital expenditures, their planned spending for this calendar year, it's something to the tune of like $700 to $725 billion. I mean, that's not chump change. A lot of money that they're throwing into data centers and compute.
And the other thing that happened too is, of course, Apple came out, and Apple's expected to come out with a new phone later in the year in September. This flip phone, some are saying as much as $2,000 a phone, we'll have to see. Forget about the data center build out. They had a stock buyback. Explain why that's a great thing.
Yeah, stock buybacks are just another way for businesses to distribute money to the shareholders. Historically, they would rely on like dividends, right? You own a share of stock, has a certain dividend. But in the 1980s, it became much more common for them to actually do buybacks. And that just involves them going out into the market, buying back those shares. So you have fewer shares outstanding, same amount of earnings, or perhaps higher if they're growing. So you distribute that. That can actually drive those earnings per share higher. So if you decide to not sell your shares into the market, you're effectively owning a bigger slice of the pie.
And let's talk about where Joe started us off and the fact that maybe there is a change coming with Iran, but of course, higher gas prices are certainly affecting almost everybody. And not only when you fill up your tank, but distribution of goods and so on and so forth. So people would like this to come to some type of resolution. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see something this weekend.
We never know, right? It's like you could be saying one thing and then just give it a few hours and it can change.
It's kind of like the weather.
Very much so. Latest that we have heard is that Iran has floated another proposal, a modification of a previous one. There are certain red lines, I'm sure, that President Trump has in terms of what an agreement must look like. probably has to deal with their nuclear program, since that's one of the reasons, I think the reason, why he went in there to begin with. And if that's off limits for the Iranians, then I don't see how this can really end very quickly. But the clock is ticking. If we just think about the economic hit to Iran, right? I mean, they've been decimated from a military perspective, but they are losing a lot of money every day that they're not able to actually sell their oil on the markets. And that's a function of the blockade. Also, their storage tanks are filling up. Within 20 days, according to some estimates, is that those storage tanks will be full and they might actually have to turn off their production.
Yeah, that would not be good.
No, especially since the wells that they're drilling, what happens is basically you turn it off, it builds up the pressure, and then it can destroy the well. And they don't have the resources to rebuild these things.
And so, you saw what happened too this past week, and perhaps it's another crack.
Yeah, so the UAE, United Arab Emirates, they decided that they were going to leave OPEC. Now, keep in mind, UAE, they are, I think, a decent ally of the United States. They have a lot of investment here. So maybe there's some political pressure. But OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, it's a cartel. They get together and they try to control the volume of oil and the price. So it is a cartel. And it's tough to keep those together during these tough times. Because they're not able to actually send out their oil, they're also losing revenue. So when the actual Strait of Hormuz opens up, they're probably going to want to drill baby drill and just ship out the oil as much as they can. If OPEC is going to put a cap or a quota as to how much they can actually sell, this shows, I think, that after that strait opens, we could see a more rapid reversal in the price of oil than a lot of people may be expecting.
And the market generally looks ahead, and every time we get a piece of news, you see the price of oil flipping around. I wish they would change the price of the oil at the gas tank as fast as the market adjusts to it, but there's a lot more to talk about, including Fed Chair Powell's swan song, but kind of swan song. He's going to stick around, and apparently Trump doesn't care. But there's a lot more to talk about: economic news, the Federal Reserve, and much more.
And if retirement is getting closer, or you are a few years in, there might be a few things you have questions about. How are these recent headlines you're hearing on our Week in Review affecting what you have worked hard for? Click the Get Started button. That's the first step at annexwealth.com. Maybe there's something you don't need. Maybe you're paying too much for something. It's a whole team working together in-house at Annex. We can be on your team. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. So, three myths about extending your tax return. While we all hope that filing our tax returns is a smooth and easy process, sometimes life gets in the way and you need to extend your return. Give you a little more time. You just can't get that one document in time. Someone who's seeing this right now, financial planning specialist Arabella Parents, is back on the show. Hey, Arabella.
Hello.
So, let's start with myth number one. Filing an extension increases an audit risk.
Yes, this is one that I hear really commonly from people, and this is a myth. The reality is that there is no evidence at all that extensions increase the likelihood of an audit. Actually, really interestingly, there is some research that might indicate that the opposite is true, that audit risk is actually lower when you extend your return. So returns completed earlier may be rushed, and so extensions give you time to really sit down, thoroughly gather that information, and prepare, also at a time when tax professionals are less overwhelmed. There is definitely a crush to get as much work done before the tax deadline, so extensions just give you some time, make sure that you're doing everything right, which hopefully should decrease any mistakes, the amount of errors that would appear on your return. And the IRS uses historical data and industry norms where they flag any outliers for audits. So if your numbers are a little bit off from what they normally see, they might want to look deeper into it in an audit. So filing later means that there's a larger data pool that the IRS is using, which could lead to less false positives. Now, this is not a super strong guarantee that you're not going to get audited or anything. True audit risk is more dependent on your return itself rather than the timing of it. Any discrepancies between the income that you report and the income that's reported by your employer or financial institutions or any others, that's more likely to lead to an audit rather than just whether you extend or not. It also, if you have higher income or if you have a business, those are other factors that could lead to more audits.
And you hear the word audit, and it's kind of a scary word, but sometimes just asking the right questions can make all the difference. And how about myth number two? An extension gives you more time to pay.
So this one is not true. An extension gives you more time to file your tax return, not more time to pay the tax. So any taxes that you may owe are still due by the original tax return due date. Typically for individuals, this is April 15th. So you may be subject to late payment penalties and interest if you don't pay enough or on time. So that's why it's important when you're filing for that extension, you should make an estimate of what you think that you will owe. Maybe you're missing a little bit of information. You do your tax return that 90% to see, do I owe for this year and what payment should I make? And it's difficult to know that exactly, but what we'll do is we'll sometimes use prior year numbers to estimate, or just pay enough to reach that safe harbor, which is 90% of your current year's tax, or 100 or 110%, depending on your adjusted gross income, of your prior year's tax liability. So you just want to make sure that you're hitting at least that base safe harbor amount to not owe those underpayment penalties.
Sometimes we all need a little bit more time to pay, though, depending on what you did throughout the year. And myth number three, you need a reason to file an extension.
Yeah, so I'm going to read this directly off of the individual extension form, the Form 4868. You don't have to explain why you're asking for the extension. That is what the government is telling you directly on that form. So the extensions are often actually granted automatically. If you file it online, they'll be granted even within a few minutes most of the time. So you really don't need to have any explicit reason. It could just be you need a little bit of extra time. You're missing that document, right? So there actually is no requirement to justify that extension.
You can just extend it if you want to. And how long is the extension for?
Yeah, so the extension is automatically 6 months. So you have until October 15th to do it. So that doesn't mean you have to wait until October to start preparing that return. We would advise that you start working on it as soon as you have that time. You have those missing documents whenever you're first able to do it and take the time to do your return. So we don't want to have another tax crush happening in October, which unfortunately does happen sometimes. People get their documents in October instead. Maybe let's shoot for May.
Now, could you do that every single year? Or does that kind of raise a red flag if you file an extension every single year because you want till October?
No, so there really isn't any red flags here. Sometimes people just have a business ownership where you're waiting on that K-1 from your business every single year. It takes a little bit longer. That's totally fine. And so I actually do see a number of clients who extend every single year. Some people just are habitual extenders. Nothing wrong with that. Again, like we talked about, there's not an additional audit risk to that as long as you're making those payments in time.
She is a financial planning specialist who's seen a lot of tax returns and deadlines and timing situations when it comes to taxes. Arabella Parents, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
More in-person events this past week with big turnout, so thank you if you've joined us. Love to see your questions, too, with this webinar coming up on Friday. A week from today, the Instant Insight series continues. Jobs and the Economic Outlook, Friday, May 8th. Into May here, 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll help you make sense of the latest headlines and data, how the latest numbers might affect you, and maybe some potential paths to protect what you've worked hard for. Taking your questions live, click events, set that reminder at annexwealth.com. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson going to be part of that Instant Insight series as always. A lot of consumer news to talk about right now. How are people feeling consumer-wise? I love the consumer stuff.
I do too, because I am a consumer, right? And so I feel like I can really relate to it. Consumer, we did get some consumer confidence numbers out, which were a little bit better than expected. So the Conference Board, they do a monthly survey and they ask people about economic conditions. How are you doing now? What are you thinking about the future? And people are feeling a little glum about the moment, but optimistic about the outlook. And so I think that's kind of a good way to think about what all the the news flow has done to the consumer psyche. You have been hearing that also from businesses. This past week, since we're in earnings season, I always like pulling out a few interesting nuggets. Here's one, Domino's Pizza, which I just had that for dinner last night, and I have leftovers in the fridge that I'm looking forward
to.
You're
not in a food coma today?
No, a little bit. Yeah, exactly. They noted that carryout orders are increasing, but the delivery orders are dropping. And if you've ordered from them, you know that there are those delivery fees. So one of the ways, and they've said this in the past, whenever there's been a consumer slowdown, one of the first things their consumers do to kind of cut back on the amount of spend is they do carryout more than delivery. So it's showing up there. Now, Coca-Cola, they also reported earnings, and they did pretty well. They were saying that they actually had revenues better than expected, mostly driven by smaller sizes. And they are reducing the price of those relative to the full size. The margins are perhaps a little bit stronger for them, but that's another way people are beginning to cut back. Instead of buying the full size can, you get those small ones. And so it's really fascinating the way in which you can get that peek into how consumers, what they're thinking and feeling actually feeds into how they're spending.
I know you're a big history buff, especially when it comes to the economy. When you're looking back a couple of decades before we had all this social media and a lot of noise, do you find that consumer confidence changes more rapidly pre-social media, pre-noise, pre-internet, all of those kinds of things?
Believe it or not, the volatility, so the variability that we see in consumer sentiment and consumer confidence is about the same as what it always has been. And I think part of it is, number one, they're only measuring these things monthly, right? So that's probably, it would be very different if you could take a person's confidence temperature every single day. So maybe we would see more volatility right in the numbers there. But also, people still get their news, or they always did, but perhaps it was from radio, video,
newspaper,
with television, newspaper. Mm-hmm. So just different sources. A lot of times, people's views of the economy are very much driven by their political affiliation. That's something that we see with every single election. If your person wins, then all of a sudden you're feeling much better about the economy than if your person loses. So it can flip back and forth, oftentimes driven by politics. Now, when I do look at some of the history here, we are at kind of lows when it comes to sentiment and confidence, which is a little bizarre when you look at how low the unemployment rate is as well. So we have not had periods like this where the economy is doing so well, but people are feeling so bad.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, our chief economic strategist at Annex, helps us cut through the noise. Financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite, 9 total locations. And another reminder, because these events are popular, we're going to be out in Neshota this coming Wednesday for Passion Assets and Legacy, preserving the stories behind your treasures. That's going to be at the Red Circle Inn, Provimi Salon, Watertown Plank Road in Neshota this Wednesday. Click events, reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist, is here, and our CEO of Annex, Dave Spano, doing some traveling this weekend and kind of talking about the Annex brand, which from time to time we like to revisit and remind people of what we do here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And was in Boston, which of course there's a lot of financial companies, most famously Fidelity is there, but a lot of financial people. So they were smart about the questions they were asking. And so one question that was consistently asked is, what is the standard of care? Now, that probably does not mean a lot for a lot of our listeners, but I thought maybe we should explain it, because there are two standards of care. There's one called the best interest standard of care, and there's one called the fiduciary standard of care. The best interest, you would say, well, why wouldn't you act in my best interest? And the fiduciary standard, Brian, is really an obligation to always act in the best interest.
That's right. And it's something that, I mean, we could probably call this, you know, what grinds my gears or gets my goat, right, is when I hear about and see advertisements about the best interest. And oftentimes it can be in that particular moment and that particular transaction where they are considering your best interest. Now, are they acting in your best interest all the time? So the way that I think about the difference for some situations where it might be a broker operating under what's called Regulation BI, best interest, from the Securities Exchange Commission, that could be in that transaction in that moment. Well, what about the next moment and the ongoing monitoring? Whereas for RIAs, registered investment advisors, which we here at Annex are, that is under the fiduciary umbrella. So under the Advisors Act, and also we have professional obligations, you know, all the designations everybody has, it comes with certain professional obligations as well to act in the best interest all the time, right? So that's, I think, a biggest difference is it in the transaction or is it in the relationship?
And we have a contractual agreement that we give our clients this fiduciary standard of care that says we will always do that. Now, we also say fee-only fiduciary. So a lot of people are kind of twisting it these days and saying, I'm a fiduciary some of the time. I call them part-time fiduciaries. And that's the reason why we say fee-only fiduciary. That means we do not accept commissions. Mm-hmm. Where some of these folks that you're saying, oh, yeah, I'm a fiduciary, but then they sell you this insurance product, and they don't tell you how much they make. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's, you know, it's something that should be looked at. If they're going to make a large compensation, a large commission on selling you one of these annuities, maybe they disclose it. And so that's part of the disclosure that we like. So fee-only fiduciary really further separates the folks that either say fiduciary some of the time or best interests altogether.
That's right. So the fee-only fiduciary is we are paid by the client, not by the company whose perhaps, you know, services the product, let's say an ETF, exchange-traded fund or mutual fund. We're not paid by them. We are paid by the client. And with that fiduciary hat on, it's about the duty of loyalty, being loyal to the client, and also the duty of care. And so that's about what is the level of service that you can expect to get as well. Because if you don't have that duty of care, right, exactly what level of service are you getting, not just in terms of getting that recommendation or then that transaction, but that ongoing relationship?
And it's not just that alone. It is, of course, everything else that we can bring to the table that just isn't asset management. It is estate planning, tax planning, financial planning, all of it wrapped together in one transparent fee.
That's why we say know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. When you have questions, especially when it comes to your money and where it's headed, having someone ready to answer them can make all the difference. Ask Annex. Got a quick question? Thinking about making the switch? Hit the Ask Annex button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Well, finding long-term care for a loved one can be confusing, it can be challenging, and you don't really know who to talk to, and it can happen rapidly. Something personal that I experienced is there are people to help with this. One of those people is right here in our area. Her name is Pam Foti, co-owner and elder care consultant for Vesta Senior Network. And Pam, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks so much, Joe.
I didn't know that your services existed. And I just kind of want to put that out there for folks going through this right now, that you've helped a lot of people. You started this company yourself. It is not a franchise, but you helped my mom find placement just a couple of years ago. What are some of the things that you look for in a facility when people come to you?
That's a really good question. Actually, one of my very best friends called me this morning asking about her significant other's mother, whom I've never met, right? And she's like, so what would be the best place for her? And I said, okay, dial it back. You know how this goes. We need to look at the three C's. We need to take a look at care. What kind of care does she need today? What kind of care can we maybe project that she might need in the future? What is her care going to cost and what are her financial means? How can she afford to pay for it? And what happens if she outlives her assets? And then the third C is taking a look at the community and what is going to be important to her. Where is she going to feel at home? So the three C's are the care, cost, community, and I need to know those things about each individual before I can responsibly make any sort of suggestions.
Of course, cost is a big factor, but once we find your services and you help us find that right place, when we walk into some of these places, as soon as I found you, I just felt the weight of the world off my shoulders.
Thanks, good. I'm glad.
You know, and we do a lot of these live events as well, where it's getting ahead of memory changes, how to plan for something like that, not just financially, but also from a lifestyle perspective. So as you've helped clients, what have you found that they have said about working with you and some of the things they've liked about some of those facilities?
Well, I think what you just said, Joe, is what we hear over and over and over again, is that the weight of the world was lifted from my shoulders. And very often in that first conversation that usually starts over the phone, or it might start sitting with me sitting with a family in mom or dad's rehab room in a subacute rehab situation. And as soon as they know that they have the help and that they're not going to have to do this alone, you can see their shoulders lift. And that is, you know, generally speaking, what we hear. Everything you just said is that people didn't know that there were people like me to help. They would have no idea where to even begin, because if you've seen one assisted living community, you've seen one, because they're all so different and do different things. And under their licensure, there's a very, very wide bandwidth, and they can choose what they're going to do within that license.
When you look at the costs, because that's obviously a big discussion, you work with different levels of affordability.
Absolutely.
Pam Foti is Vesta Senior Network, co-owner, elder care consultant. What is the website so people can get in touch with you?
Vesta, V as in Victor, E, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, A, the word senior, the word network.com. VestaSeniorNetwork.com.
And my mom's been very happy in the facility you helped her find. We enjoy going there very much. So
she's
Pam knows what she's doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Deanne Phillips, real quick, you have been part of these live events as well, getting ahead of memory changes. So we can kind of make this all come together with Pam's services and our services here at Annex.
We absolutely do, Joe, and we do that all the time. Look also at the community resources like the Alzheimer's Association, which I know, Pam, you have a connection with as well.
Yep.
To really help people get ahead of what they don't know. We think education is power.
And you don't have to do it alone. We can help you plan for something like this. Combined with Pam's services, finding the right long-term care and planning for it doesn't have to be stressful. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Glad you found us. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This is also a podcast on demand. Thank you for listening on the radio and downloading the podcast. Just Google Annex Money Talk, the Axiom. That is also our free weekly newsletter with our week in review video from this show in your email on Sunday mornings. Just search Annex Axiom. That's an easy way to be reminded about our weekly content. Other podcasts too, like the Wealthy Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America. Some people you might know on that, some great guests. The SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday morning. And our new Women in Wealth podcast, featuring special guests to help empower women of all ages through genuine conversations. And that podcast right on our AnnexWealth.com website. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, you know, think about throughout my career, Fed Chair Greenspan and Bernanke and Janet Yellen and now Chair Powell. I mean, I might be missing one in there, but it's a significant event when you get a new Fed chair, because they really set policy that can make significant differences, not only in the economy, but in everyday life. So Chairman Powell's swan song was this past week. It kind of was not a mic drop at all. He just said thanks and walked off the stage, though. But he looks like he's going to stay on after his chairmanship is done on May 15th.
Yeah, we'll have to see how long that lasts. I looked at Polymarket just because it's kind of an interesting place to see where people are placing bets on this as to when will he leave fully, right? Because he has the one role as the chair of the Federal Reserve. Now, Kevin Warsh, his nomination has made it through the Senate Banking Committee. It's going to go to the Senate. Most likely, that's going to be a rubber stamp, and he will be able to assume the chairmanship on May 15th or the day after, right? So that's kind of the transition there. But Chair Powell, his role as a governor, a member of the board there, that doesn't expire until January 2028. It was in the 1930s was the last time that we had a chair who stayed on past the end of his chairmanship. And that was, you know, obviously a very interesting time in terms of for the economy and the world as a whole. Chair Powell, during his press conference, he said that he's going to stick around until this whole investigation into the cost overruns for the renovation project, until that is truly and finally settled. The Department of Justice, they did say they're dropping it, but they almost said that they're going to put it in like carbonite, like with if you remember exactly. with Han Solo with exactly. Was that Return of the Jedi, right?
When he was, right.
Where it's going to be kind of frozen until the Fed's Inspector General is done with their investigation.
Right.
So who knows how long that's going to take?
Yeah, but let's switch topics and not topics together. But Kevin Warsh coming in looks interesting to yeah. us. We think he was the most qualified person, but his thesis is going to be different than the ones that preceded him from Yellen and Powell in the fact that there was a lot of transparency. In fact, you could go all the way back to Greenspan about transparency. And he's going to talk about the statements that they make, this jawboning. Yeah. He might try to get away from that, number one. And then, of course, number two, what he believes about quantitative easing.
Oh, yeah. Two huge differences in terms of the communication and then also the size of the Fed's balance sheet, also known as that quantitative easing. In terms of the communication, Chairman Greenspan, he was very famous for being very like obtuse with his language. He famously once said about how, if you think you understand what I said, I must have misspoke.
Exactly.
Which always made it interesting to try to parse what he was saying.
And I said the other day that, you know, he's 100 years old and still around, married, of course, to Andrea Mitchell.
Yes.
And so she's keeping him alive, but 100 years old and still around.
Yeah, God bless him for that. And after Greenspan, then we got Bernanke. He thought that monetary policy would be more effective if there was more communication, the forward guidance. And the theory behind that was that you could actually shape people's expectations of what the Fed will do, and then almost the markets can do the Fed's work for it.
Yeah.
Right? So they say something.
And I say that, Brandon, I mean to interrupt, but I said that before, that these bond vigilantes really have a lot to say. They haven't said much lately, but I always joke that you could put me on as Fed chair because I would just watch the market and react to it. Sometimes I think they do.
I think you're absolutely right, because they have these trial balloons. They say something, see what the market reaction is. Does it increase long-term interest rate, change spreads, change financial conditions? And that can almost be like kind of a way to say, like, was this a good idea or not? And ever since Bernanke, and then Yellen, she really, I think, made the Fed a lot more transparent with more communication. Then Powell took it to the next level. Warsh is like, maybe we have too much of this good thing. There's too much communication. Maybe we can dial that back a little bit. And one of the strong arguments in favor of that is, when you say something, you want to follow through on it. And to what extent do you actually paint yourself into a corner where going into the meeting, you're like, well, I've already committed to this.
Right.
And so he wants to have more optionality at the meetings.
So most importantly, what does this mean to our listeners and more importantly, our clients?
Yeah.
Is will this affect portfolios? Will it affect economic outcomes? And I think that's what we are going to pay the most attention to.
That's right. And we've discussed it at our investment committee pretty thoroughly. And our belief in this is that we could see interest rates maybe be a little bit more volatile, but it can also bring more credibility to what the Fed is doing. So in a way, it can actually help anchor those inflation expectations, lower those interest rates, but create a little bit more volatility. That's where I think that it's really important to have that balanced portfolio over the long term.
We all agree with that, but that doesn't mean that that is going to be the outcome, right? Because if we have higher inflation, you could get a higher yield, but the bond prices, as we all know, move in inverse directions. So that's the reason why we build a balanced portfolio with equities, both domestic and international, fixed income, cash, and alternatives. And that is how you get a balanced portfolio.
So what do we think is going to happen with traffic with the Strait of Hormuz when it finally opens? How is that going to be organized?
I'm not sure if it's going to be all that well organized. I mean, it probably will. I think that actually what they've been doing, based upon some of the satellite imagery data that we've been able to see through various data providers like Bloomberg, is that they're not just all kind of like in a marina with the boats when they're just kind of floating around and then you're going to hear the horn and everybody kind of like is like, all right, let's go. I think that they're actually trying to organize things, line up, because when you go through that strait, it is fairly narrow, right? You go from a very large area to that choke point. And so there's already a defined lanes of traffic. And for the most part, as you get closer to it, it does look like it's fairly organized, where they're trying to get through and sometimes sneaking through when they can. So there has been that. It's more when you get further back in line where I think that they're just kind of sitting there floating and trying to figure out who's going to go next. Most of the time, what I have read is that it is a first come, first serve kind of situation. Whoever is first in line or who was there first, they get to go first, even if they aren't necessarily exactly physically like next in line. It's one of the things that President Trump, I'm sure that he has been talking to other leaders and people in the military as to who's going to actually organize that, because the faster they can get them through, the better. It reminds me a little bit of when you're boarding a plane, right? As far as, you know, Southwest, they had the whole melee about just go on and grab a seat. And then others, it's line up. And so Southwest, they have switched to that as far as with the assigned seats. Having the assigned seats is a little bit faster than just having
stressful too.
Every man and woman for himself.
Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or just search Annex Money Talk wherever you get your podcast. We had a big month for downloads, so thank you for downloading Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.